Okay, guys. Welcome to our podcast for consumer behavior. My name is Noah.
I'm Caleb.
And we are here today with Reggie McMaster.
Yep, that's right.
Sounds good, from Ide Bailey. So we can just get right into it. So where are you from, Reggie? You know, how'd you get into accounting, become an audit manager?
So I actually grew up in Northwest Minnesota. Very, very small town, less than 800 people. Came to NDSU to pursue accounting. Decided on Fargo because it was far enough from home that people didn't always come visit, but I could still go home when I wanted to. And then when I was a junior, I interned with, or no, it would have been my senior year, because my junior year I studied abroad. So my senior year, I interned with Ide Bailey, and then I ended up, they gave me an offer, and I've been there ever since. So.
Cool, cool. Why'd you become, why'd you decide to become an audit manager?
So I actually, during school, I did a different internship as well. I did a private accounting internship with a company here in town, and I kind of got bored in the day-to-day activity. It was a lot of repetitiveness, and I really needed just something that was different each day. And then I interned at Ide Bailey, and every day was different. I worked with different people. I worked with different clients. It was a little more fast-paced in what I was looking for. So when they offered me a job, I took it, and then from there I got promoted to senior associate and then manager here the last couple of years. So
you'd definitely recommend public accounting over private,
just for in terms of interest? For me personally, yes. I know there's a lot of people that end up taking the public route, and then they're in there for 3, 4, 5 years, and then they want things to slow down a little bit, or they find a different opportunity out of public in the private sector. I have a lot of my friends that I went to school with, they went straight into the private sector and they love it. So it really just depends on what you're looking for and what you kind of want in that career path for yourself.
Yeah, so Ide Bailey being, you know, such a big company here, how's it, how do you deal with, like, you know, being such a big company, you know, have a lot of clients, how do you deal with, like, daily stress?
Yeah, definitely. So Ide Bailey, we are very well known in the area. Actually, we are a top 25 firm in the country as well. So we have offices pretty much west of the Mississippi. We went into California here a couple months ago. But being part of a big firm, I enjoy it because of all the resources I have. So I might have a client going through something. I'm like, you know, I have no idea. I have never heard of this. I've never seen this. But I know this person over here, and they can help me. So having that resource is really nice. When I'm in my day-to-day work, I don't feel like I'm part of a huge company. I can walk into any door that I want to, and if I have a question, I know they're going to help me, or they're going to point me in the right direction. So, like, it is a big company, but it doesn't always feel that big.
Sure, for sure.
So what's your favorite part about working at Ide Bailey, then?
If you've ever talked to anyone from Ide Bailey, I think you're going to hear the same thing, but it's the people and the culture. Accounting, as you know, it's debits and credits, it's books, it's bookwork. You can do that really anywhere, but it's who you're doing it with and the people that are there to help you along the way that really makes the difference. I also really enjoy switching up my days. So I have a lot of clients, and I work in certain industries kind of specific to me and what I decided I liked. But every day is different. I'm helping a staff one day. I'm answering a client question one day. I was at a conference last week mingling with potential clients for a couple days. So it just really, it gives you a lot of variety, which is what I like.
Yeah, kind of like a perfect segue into our next topic. But like, so, you know, consumer behavior, it's, we're all, you know, we talk about culture, you know, how it affects, you know, businesses. So you said the culture must be great at Ide Bailey, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we really like to strive for is our culture. We like to be able to say that we care about our employees. There's a lot of things that they do that really does show that as well. So, like, we get a wellness benefit every year. So, like, I get $600 because it kind of goes in increments. The longer you've been there, the more you get. But I get $600 every year to spend on whether it's a gym membership or, like, running shoes or something in the fitness world. So, like, one year I bought a road bike. I pay for my gym membership, some shoes, some triathlon type stuff like that. So that's really nice. The workplace is really flexible too. So, like, last week I had to work from home because I got carpet installed in my basement. And I didn't have to, as long as it didn't interfere, just kind of worked from home, did my thing, and no one really questioned any of it. And I was still able to get my work done. So it's really nice to have people that I feel they care about you just as much as I care about my staff and I care about how they're doing and both professionally and personally. You kind of get to know everyone on differing levels, but it's nice to have that.
Wow, cool.
So do you have remote access to pretty much everything that you would otherwise have access to at the office?
Yep, I can work completely from home. We do like a VPN concept. So anything, as long as I have decent internet, which is sometimes hit and miss depending on where you're at for a client. But if I have decent internet, I can work as if I'm in the office.
Cool. And then you were talking about last week you said you were away at a conference.
Yep.
What were you doing there?
So I work in, one of the industries I work in is the affordable housing industry, which is an industry that they construct and rehab apartment complexes for low-income individuals. So the rents in these complexes are controlled based on their level of income. They can't pay over 30% of their annual income in rent. And so these are funded by large investors, some government funding, that type of thing. So it was out in Colorado, and it was put on by the state of Colorado, their Housing Now program. And so it is a bunch of developers and financers and housing authorities, which is what I work with, all in one spot. And they do like different kind of meetings where they talk about different topics and different struggles and things like that. And then there's like luncheons and there's dinners and there's socials and receptions, and everything has to do with socializing and finding the next client or finding out how you can help the clients. So it was myself and another senior manager that went, and we just kind of mingled with some of our current clients. They introduced us to some new people, made some new connections, hung out in Colorado while it snowed like 6 inches on us, so that was neat. But
Do you travel a lot then for work, or is this like a regular thing?
So in audit in general, it kind of depends on what industries you fall into if you're going to travel or not. So I lucked out and I somehow managed to get the best of everything. So in the winter, I don't really travel a whole lot. A lot of my audits in this affordable housing industry, we are able to do remotely because they are so small. So we get a lot of stuff electronically. I just kind of hang out in Fargo. I don't really have to worry about flight delays or really awful roads or anything like that. But then I do transition into, I have a handful of housing authorities that are all in Colorado, so I get to go to Colorado a pretty decent amount. I go to Billings, Montana once or twice each year, and then a lot of my nonprofit clients, which is my other industry, are kind of local, so it'll be a day here, a day there. And then a couple conferences that I go to, so like one in Colorado. I go to one in Vegas every year.
Ooh, fun.
So I kind of lucked out. I don't have to go to the small town North Dakota towns, whereas like a lot of our healthcare jobs are in those very small towns where it's a nursing home that's in this town and your motel, your door is on the outside or that type of thing. So it just really depends. And then insurance travels a lot and banking will travel a little bit, but it just kind of depends on what industries you fall in. So on average, I would say I'd probably travel about 20 nights, 25 nights a year, so 4 to 5 weeks a year.
Nice. Fun.
Yeah.
They usually fly you out there, or do they make you drive out to, say, the middle of Montana?
No. Montana, I fly. Colorado, I fly. But anything kind of in that Minnesota, North Dakota, they'll probably have you drive in. But yeah, they fly us to the good places.
So how do you find the, what do you think is the best way to attract new clients at these big events?
Honestly, I usually just start by being a genuine person. So just kind of striking up that common bond or that common area of interest and then going from there. A lot of times it ends up being like who you know. So a lot of times our clients will be like, these are our auditors and they're great, which people don't say that about their auditors very often. We're usually not the nice people. But they're great. You should meet them, or they do the connections that way. And it's really about how you can serve them. So it's not what can you do for me, it's what can we do for you, and how can we help your business grow, or how can we help you with a problem you're having, or if they're having cash flow issues, okay, well, let's take a look at it. Like, what are you spending your money on? Where is your money coming in? Maybe looking at some of those other areas. I know the tax world is a different world that I know very little about. I have someone do my taxes for me. But I know they do a lot of consulting, especially with like tax reform, so it's really about how you can help them and what you can do for them instead of what they can do for you.
So do you ever consider picking up tax as a line of work
instead? No, I would not. I use TurboTax for my own taxes, and this last year was the first year I had to do it because my friend, she actually works in the tax department down in our Minneapolis office, and she usually does mine for me. And she was like, no, I'm swamped. I absolutely cannot. I'm like, well, TurboTax it is, because that's about the knowledge of my... I know how to answer my clients' questions and where to send them, which is what I need to know in my position. I don't think I could ever switch to tax. I don't think I could do it.
Yeah, it's not for everybody.
No.
What about something a little more off the beaten path, like forensic accounting or something like that?
Forensics has always been interesting to me. Absolutely. Actually, when I came to NDSU, I was super interested in their forensic program, and then it kind of just fell off my radar a little bit. But we do have a forensics department, too, and I always find their stuff to be very interesting.
So you said you your first internship, you said, was at Ide Bailey? Your only?
I did a private internship at a company in town here, a trucking company.
Okay. So how was that? What made you switch to Ide Bailey? How was that internship like?
Yep. So I did, it was a sales accounting internship. So I did all their sales accounting for the summer. And then when I was done with that stuff, I helped like accounts payable. I helped their, I actually ended up staying on afterwards, working nights in their shop area, their service area, helping them close out work orders and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed the people I worked with and everything. I just wanted a little bit more variety. Mm-hmm. All of the people were great, and I enjoyed it a lot, but I just wanted the variety, which made me lean towards the public internship, and I landed Ide Bailey.
Let's go.
So I take it you'd never consider switching to a smaller firm that does, you know, less stuff?
It would depend on what those opportunities were. I don't know. I kind of like the hectic schedule. I enjoy it for now.
Yeah.
At this point in my life, I enjoy the hectic schedule. Mm-hmm. I like running around and doing different things all the time, so...
So the clock just rolls by.
It just keeps going. It makes the day go faster.
So then you probably had to take your a CPA exam, right?
Yep.
So how was that experience like, you know, studying, taking it?
Yeah. So long. No, so I did the master's program here at NDSU. I actually did 20 grad credits in one semester. Then I just had one class left because I had taken two previously as an undergrad, the 20 credits, and then I had one class left, and that was audit two, and I took it as a summer course. While I did that, I studied for the audit exam, and then the rest of that summer, I studied for the other three. I managed to get two of them done before, so I had three passed by the time I started at Ide Bailey full-time in August, and then I passed the last one before the end of the year. So I really crammed them all into the summer, but if I hadn't, I don't know that I would have been able to find the time.
A little harder to get the studying in when you're working full-time.
Exactly, yeah. So what I did was I studied during the summer, and I treated that as my job. So all my friends were working. My boyfriend at the time was working, so I'd be like, nope, I have to get up. I need to study. And then when they would get home, I could also have my free time. Yeah. So it worked out well that way. It got much more difficult when I started full-time, and I had to study and work. It wasn't my favorite, but my recommendation is definitely do it as soon as possible. Life happens fast.
What do you look for, like, when you audit, like, somebody or, like, you audit a company?
Yep.
What is it, like, you look for when you do that?
Yep. So what we're doing as an auditor, so we're not, like, the IRS auditors.
Yeah.
We're not... We can be kind of mean, but we're not usually the mean auditors. We're usually hired by the client to come in, and it might be because they have a loan that's financing some of their operations or their buildings that's large enough that the bank said we want an audit. It might be, in my case, what I work on for like housing authorities and those and nonprofits. A lot of times they receive federal funding, and if you receive a certain level of federal funding, they require an audit with some compliance work that goes behind it. And then like the tax credits that I work on, one of the owners requires an audit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that what's driving it is really kind of where all of that comes from. And so when we go out there, ultimately what we're doing is we're making sure that what's on the books and like what they're reporting is accurate. So what we do is we do like a risk-based approach. So if you're looking at a company, it's like, okay, what transactions could something be wrong in? Or like what transactions are considered risky? Like, do they want to make something look really good in order to meet some standard, or do they need to have something look really low to meet this? And that's the approach we take. And then we go through and we do different procedures that are designed around that general concept to make sure that what they're reporting is accurate.
So have you ever come across a company that their books were just so bad you declined to audit them?
We did not decline to audit them. That is the nice part about where I work. We refer them to a different department. So... We have what we call our business outsourcing group. What they do is they're kind of like a controller for hire type of thing. So if we're working through something, we're like, you know, this is going to take a lot of time, a lot of effort. It's going to cost you a lot of money for us to sit here and go through this for days or hours or whatever it is. We have this department over here that you can kind of hire, and they can help you go through this process and kind of clean it up. The only drawback is depending on what we do, we might not be independent, so we can't do the audit, but we're still serving that client. We're still getting them to the point where their books are in a much better place than they were when we started. So that's kind of a catch-22, is we have to look at it and say, okay, does this make sense, or does something else make sense for them?
Mm-hmm.
So, but there have been very, very messy clients. But I like the messy clients. It's kind of a puzzle. There's always an end. I mean, debits have to equal credits.
Yeah.
So there's always an end in sight. It's just finding it.
How long do you think an average audit takes, or is it really customer or client to client?
Yes, very client to client. So my smaller audits that I've referred to a couple times, those probably average like 30 to 40 hours total, start to finish. We have jobs where we'll send out 4 staff for 3 weeks, and they'll work on it the whole time, 50 mm-hmm. hours a week. So it just kind of depends on what the entity is. So like insurance jobs are huge, and they go multiple weeks, whereas some nonprofits are 1 week with 2 people. So it just kind of depends what you're working on.
Okay. Ever done anything the size of like a Fortune 500 company? Massive project?
No, I haven't. We tend to kind of focus in our regional areas. We have a couple publicly traded companies, but a lot of them are smaller publicly traded companies. The Fortune 500s tend to stay with the big four.
Yeah.
So
you know, there's like a busy season for like taxes, all that. Are you affected anyway when that starts coming? Do you work more hours then, or how's that like?
Yeah, absolutely. So every industry has its own busy season. Our natural busy season kind of follows the tax busy mm-hmm. season, just because 12/31 is the most common year end you're going to see for a lot of businesses and organizations. Healthcare is an industry that they have a lot of 6/30 year ends that are due by the end of September. So they have that busy season. Schools, kind of the same concept, a lot of 6/30 year ends for schools and some governments. Nonprofits have a lot of 6/30 year ends. So it just kind of depends on your industry and where it falls, but definitely very true busy seasons for all industries. I have a pretty strong busy season the month of January and February, rolling a little into March, and then I pick up again in probably that July, August mm-hmm. timeframe again for some 6/30 work.
We're talking like 70, 80-hour weeks.
Not
that bad.
They can get that bad, but lately I would say in the last couple of years, I probably haven't worked over 65 hours in a week. We usually hover so there's charge and non-charge hours. Our guideline that we kind of throw out there is 55 charge hours, which will usually put you at like 60 hours a week. So I would say I hover around that 65, 70 hours a week. But I also kind of pick those hours. So I'm one where I go in as early as possible because I want to be home by 6:30. I'm not getting home after 6:30. I need my evenings to myself. I need to go to the gym or whatever it is I want to do. And then I'll usually work like half days on Saturdays. And then Sundays is my no work day. It's for my husband and I. We do our thing. We go to breakfast. We hang out. It's just, unless I have a really big deadline, Sunday is my no work day.
Or just go home at lunch and just work from home the rest of the day?
I've thought about it. And actually, on my schedule, I put PTO for tomorrow just because I felt like it. So I'm going to have my computer at home. I might do a couple things, but I was all caught up. So I was like, well, I think I deserve a day to myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
you have obviously you have interns at Ide Bailey. Do you involve them a lot in your process, or are they kind of doing their own tasks? Or
no, so we have a ton of interns at Ide Bailey. We have, right now in our audit department, I think we have 4 working. Mm-hmm. I was informed of another one yesterday that I didn't really know was there because there's so many people moving around. But we do interns for busy season, summer, and fall, in audit for sure. And then like our boss group takes a couple interns, our tax group obviously takes a handful for busy season. The nice thing of being an intern at Ide Bailey is we kind of just throw you in. Like mm-hmm. you're scheduled, we give you a week of training. You know, completely throw you in blind. But there is a week of training where we have you go in. I think they're still planning to do it, where you go and all the interns from across the firm that are starting in January get together in one location. So there's going to be interns from California and Arizona, Colorado, everywhere, and they all come to one location. And they do kind of like an onboarding process and go through our systems and that type of thing. And then from there, it's a lot of on-the-job training. So your next week, you're probably going to be scheduled on an audit. They're going to say, okay, this is the day we're leaving. This is the day we're coming back. Here's your hotel room. Like, we're ready to go. And then while you're out there, they answer your questions as you go. In the audit department, you get to talk to the client, like, right away. We're probably going to screen your questions before you send you over there. But you do get to go talk to the client right away. Cool. So
you end up getting sent with a chaperone as an intern, I assume?
Yeah, a little bit. So, but it's nice getting that experience from day one.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any advice for us, maybe, when we, we're getting close, like, looking for jobs?
Yeah.
Any advice for us, look for jobs or how to get any internships, maybe, stuff like that?
Yeah, put yourself out there. The biggest thing, because I'm part of the interviewing process, too, but is kind of just getting to know the people that are out there, doing that networking piece of it. Because if you see people enough times, you start remembering them. You start remembering the conversations. They might know someone who knows someone who knows someone, and that's kind of how those connections are all made. So really putting yourself out there, being open to different opportunities. It might not be exactly the internship you wanted that you land, but it could turn into something you absolutely love. Or you cross it off the list and say, never again, I'm not doing that. But really putting yourself out there and being open and looking for those experiences early on, too. So whether that's taking part-time jobs in a field you're interested in, or finding volunteer opportunities that maybe coincide with what you're interested in, those types of things.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had like a bad interview? Have you ever had like some really weird, interviews? Or
everyone's different. I would say there's always interviewing is so awkward to start
it
with.
Is,
it just, you're sitting across a table and you're like, hi, I'm this person. You practice your spiel over and over, and everyone's nervous in the room. Just be yourself in an interview. There's always going to be the instances where you're like, I shouldn't have said that. Oh my gosh, why did I say that? That was the worst answer I could have ever had. Chances are it probably wasn't that bad. So.
Okay. That's nice.
Sure. Ever had an interview that you thought started out really badly and then you recovered from it and
absolutely
just kind of rolled with it?
Absolutely. Me personally, actually, when I was interviewing for my internships, I wanted a job so bad, I literally just threw my resume at every firm that was coming to meet the firms, at everything. I was like, I need to figure something out, like, freaking out. I'm very type A personality, so I was like, I don't have a plan, I need a plan.
Yeah.
And so I had, the week of meet the firms, I think I had like 17 interviews or something, between like firsts and seconds and private and public, and I was like, I need a job. I need to figure this out.
Whatever you can do, whatever.
But it got to the point where like I just sounded so rehearsed that it was like, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not even connecting with these people. Like, I'm not having a conversation with them. I feel like I'm a robot.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the end of it, there were times where I was like, no, I need to start over. This is awful. And I could feel myself kind of recovering as it went. But the biggest thing is, as hard as it sounds, try to relax.
Mm-hmm.
And that just happens as the interview goes, because you become more comfortable with the person you're talking to.
Yeah. So like, like you said, like, meet the firms. That's like a great way to connect with people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get like business cards or whatever.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So since I barely, so big, as we were saying before, is there any ways, like, do you have any tips or tricks for if you ever get overwhelmed or stressed?
Yeah,
you take your PTOs, but
take your PTO.
Yeah.
No, it's always, I'm very list oriented, so I make a list and I put everything on it. I actually have like 3 lists at my desk constantly. It's like what I need to get done today for work, what I need to get done in the next month for work, and then what I need to get done personally, whether that's at home or running errands, or right now my car needs a new windshield to correct it, like stuff like that. So I have my 3 lists going, and it gets really overwhelming when you look at it all in total. But as soon as you start crossing things off those lists, it's so much less overwhelming. So even if you can take, like, if you're super stressed and you just have all these things going on, just put it on paper. It's way easier to see it in front of you and be able to actually cross it off. Because then you know you've accomplished it. You know it's done. It's not, it might come back. But it's not coming back for a while. And so that's really what I do, is I try to look more than just the day. So like, yes, today I have these things to do, instead of focusing on, oh my gosh, in the next month I have 45 things to do. Well, I also have 30 days to do those 45 things. So like, really trying to put it into perspective how long you truly have to get those things done. Because as much as you think it needs to be done tomorrow, it probably doesn't. Some things might, but everything doesn't have to be done by
tomorrow. Yeah, you don't want to procrastinate, though. Yeah, you always want to keep on top of it.
Exactly. So it's really kind of just putting into perspective what's today, what's tomorrow, and what's maybe a little further away.
So would you say that's your number one recommended stress management tip for working in the accounting world?
Yes. Absolutely. If you were to walk in my office at any given point, I have post-its everywhere. I have three lists on my desk. All my new staff, all my interns. So I used to train a lot of interns. I still do. But every time I'd be like, write it on your list. Put it on your list. Well, what I know I have to do, I'm like, put it on the list. You will be a list person by the time we're done. So that's my number one tip.
Sounds good. I think that's all we got for you today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming with us, meeting with us.
No problem. I enjoyed it.
Awesome. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.